With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Sam Darnold with time, looking deep downfield into the end zone. Touchdown Jets, Robbie Anderson. And the first TD throw of Sam Darnold's career goes 41 yards.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Picked off. Marcus Peters strutting his stuff and backsplashing in. Six Rams.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Anteater Johnson in with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Feeling good, ready to go. We got a good one today.
We got a great show today. And it's kind of the first official day of fall. No, that feel? Just downpouring
the second you wake up? No.
Let's go. It's fall, baby.
When does fall actually start?
Probably not until October.
No, it's like September 21st or 2nd, something like that. We still got like 10 days.
See, but it's not the actual. I don't look at the calendar. To me, it's all about the weather. I don't look at arbitrary days that you put on there.
But the weekend's going to be super nice.
Yeah, the weekend's going to get up near 80 again.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, so you could say the 20-whatever is the start of fall, but what if we get a week of 78 and sunshine after that? That's not fall.
Well, you know, here's the other problem, too. Going off what you're talking about, I think in our area, it's changed a little bit, but not too much, in the sense of if I name a season, you pinpoint one specific weather. Summer.
Sunshine.
Winter.
Snow.
Spring.
It's kind of sun. Mix.
Wet.
Right.
Right. Whatever.
Rain, yeah.
Fall for us is kind of the same thing. It's a mix. It's a some cold, some rainy, some kind of, it's Halloween time. And then also it's like, oh, it's November 3rd and it's 78 degrees today.
I think it needs to be consistently below 70 degrees. Once you're done with 70 degrees, then you can tell me it's fall.
I don't think it needs to be. I'd actually like it to be 70 degrees.
I'm not saying that I want it to be below 70 degrees. I'm just saying when you try and tell me that it's fall and we're getting 75 degrees, I don't know how I feel about that one.
Well, what's the high today?
60s?
69?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Well, I just threw that number out there. But yesterday, and today I see it on you, yesterday was my first day that I've wore a sweater since I can't even remember.
Yeah, I'm going sweatshirt guy today. I haven't dove back into pants yet.
I'm in pants,
I'm still clinging to the shorts. I've not gone pants yet. I will say as a fat guy, though, winter time is just wonderful. When you can just wear bigger clothes and sweatshirts and stuff, and it's much more comfortable, clothing wise.
Yeah, well, I kind of feel like
stuff's
fat guy
not hot and sticky.
I feel like fat guy gets to wear less clothes in the cold.
Yeah, you don't need as much.
You're insulated.
Sure, it's nicer for a fat guy to wear a sweatshirt. We don't look as fat in sweatshirts as we do in t-shirts.
I would even argue you don't need to wear a sweatshirt if you're truly fat.
Well, yeah.
You're always warm.
Just Vaseline up, baby.
We're not that insulated, okay, you jerk?
No, speak for yourself.
It's not all just protein in
Swigard's here. Over here owning up to it. Why can't
I'm working on the dad bod like nobody's business.
Isn't that? I love that feeling, though. When you get to that, and you just kind of wake up and throw a t-shirt and a sweatshirt on. It's like, all right, this feels good.
No, no pants. I don't want pants. I want to hold off pants as long as I can.
That's just weird.
I mean, want shorts.
I'm out on clothes in general, but yeah, I'll rock some pants.
We do need, I might tweet these out as well. Marcus, who's in here, I think he's recording the damn podcast right now in the studio next to us, or he was at least earlier. He is wearing jeans with holes all over them.
Yeah, and they're like brand new jeans.
Like new jeans.
He probably spent $150 for them.
Yeah, we need to tweet these out and let people ridicule him.
I'll confirm the price tag because he'll own up
like
to it.
My jeans with holes in them, those are naturally developed holes.
Yeah, they're from 1984.
Yeah, the ripped jeans came back.
He's got they're like big holes right in the knees. You could see his kneecaps.
There was a student who was at Oregon State, and I think he just graduated like a couple years ago. I don't really know him per se. It's been more so he reached out, email, he asked some questions. We had an advisor that knew me that hooked him up contact-wise with me. And I was talking to him a little bit, followed him on social media. I see him sometimes on Instagram as I'm scrolling. And his pictures are always of like himself, by the way, middle of the summer,
yeah,
at a bar, like a rooftop bar, wearing jeans. And I'm instantly like, why are you wearing jeans?
Why?
It is 85 degrees outside right now. Dude. And then two, there's about 12 holes per leg in the jeans. And I'm thinking, you bought those.
That's a thing now again.
Yeah, it's a stylish thing.
I've never quite understood that.
Well, we'll see if the acid wash jeans make a return.
That and
I could never pull off the ripped jeans look, by the way. I always looked terrible in it. I never felt comfortable. I was always like, why am I wearing jeans if they have holes in them?
I'd go get like the Old Navy painter jeans. Yep. They're like $10.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, boom. There you go. There's your jeans for the year.
Exactly.
And you wear them every day. They never wear out.
You have three or four growing pair. Up, it was the Lawman painter pants had like the little side comb pocket down by your knee.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Old Navy had those, too.
I was on board with those. Those were my childhood jeans
right
there.
That was a go-to for me. Yeah.
Now people, it's all about showing more skin. I'm always showing about less skin. Other than summer with flip-flops, that's a different story. But the jeans nowadays, it's all about holes. It's all about capris. People are showing off their ankles and stuff. I don't get that trend.
Well, I like the look, but like ladies wear the belly shirts. They're just going past the boobs now. They got the torso showing.
Yeah, chick showing skin is a different story.
There were a couple women, by the way. I never told my state fair story, but I went to the state fair the second to last day that it was around in Salem. One too many women wearing shorts with literally their butt cheeks out of them.
Just flapping around.
And look, I know that sounds great. This was not ideal.
You take the good with the bad.
There was more bad than there was good. So
yeah,
that's the issue usually. That's
what I'm saying. That's my point. All right, let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Dirt and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right. There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on tap brought to you in the fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. I want to talk about something that happened from Monday Night Football last night. We'll do that here in just a few minutes. We've got the head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Mario Cristobal. Is this a cemented thing or is this going to change segment?
As far as I know, this is the schedule moving forward.
Okay, so he was usually on, he was on primetime for a couple weeks, and he had to change his schedule around because he wanted to go earlier, so he's now going to be on our show at 12:30 every Tuesday. The Mario Cristobal Football Show.
Boom.
We'll talk Oregon Duck football with him, get his thoughts on The Rock's new movie, because I'm sure there's one out right now.
He's got to have hot takes on The Rock.
He's got to have a good story on The Rock that he'll probably never air publicly.
I'm waiting for that one. What game is The Rock going to come to?
That's actually what I was going to ask him today.
Where are you going to fit?
Because you know there's going to be a game, and it's going to be a recruiting weekend.
Sure. You got The Rock walking around the sidelines. That's a big deal.
Why would you not milk that?
Do you do it for Stanford, or do you risk trying to beat Stanford and then having a bigger game against Washington?
I think you wait for a game that's decent, but you know you'll win. Who comes to town that's decent, but you know you'll win?
UCLA.
That's not decent. You're going to murder UCLA.
Arizona State.
There you go.
Those are their only other home games. That's all they got.
That's a good one. I would take ASU. I'd invite everybody over for ASU.
For the ASU game late in the year.
And then see if The Rock's schedule opens up. Yeah, so Mario Cristobal will join us every Tuesday at 12:30, and that starts today. Phil Steele of the College Football Preview Magazine. He's always so gracious with his schedule, and he helped us out a ton on this one. So we switched him from 12:30 to 1 o'clock. I do want to get into this segment. We didn't get into it yesterday. Is Khalil Tate good? I'm serious about this. I watched a large chunk of that Houston game, and I understand Kevin Sumlin getting killed by everybody and anybody. I did walk away going, okay, Sumlin, not impressive. Are we sure Khalil Tate is good? Everybody's just putting this on Kevin Sumlin. I'm starting to wonder, when is it time for everybody to start wondering about Khalil Tate as a quarterback? So we'll talk about that today. We got an NFL true or false to get to. We never got to the Serena Williams story. That was a wild one. Actually, pretty good viewership numbers, too, for the U.S. Open.
Did they? Was that on Saturday? It was Saturday, right?
Yes.
And then the men's final was on Sunday?
It was on Saturday. I do want to do a little bit of a college football whip around, a mini version of the NFL, and we'll go around to maybe some of the games we missed and dive back into some of the games we didn't touch on yesterday. So we'll do that. That's the show today. We're on Twitter, at Durant Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, and at Brandon Sprague. Mario Cristobal, 12:30. Phil Steele will join us at 1 o'clock. So it's a pretty football-heavy show. We're off and running on this Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for hanging out with us. Coming up next, I'm tired of hearing this narrative, and it hasn't even been 10 hours. Why are people saying this? We'll tell you what that is next. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan. All right, welcome back in. It is 12:16 on the Fan. Dirt and Sprague with you on this Tuesday. We won't have enough time to get to both those games from last night because I want to start here before we get to Mario Cristobal, head coach of Oregon. Yeah, I watched that first game. I missed a couple chunks because, you know, I can't just go home and watch football from 4 to 10:30 at night.
Oh, come on, man. Who needs kids?
I know. But I watched a large percentage of that game, including the start with the pick six. It was the most predictable reaction to anything I saw this weekend was what I saw yesterday in the Jets-Lions game. I knew after that game wrapped up, because by the way, I liked the Jets in that one.
You did.
I'm not a believer in Matt Patricia or the Lions this year. But I knew after that game ended, okay, I can't wait to hear everybody and their mom tell me about how big a mistake the Cleveland Browns made. That was the most predictable opinion that everybody was going to run with. And look, ultimately, will Darnold make Cleveland look bad? Maybe. Maybe he will. I can't definitively give you an opinion. People that do that, I think it's dumb. We haven't seen Baker Mayfield yet. And by the way, it's not for his lack of not beating out Tyrod Taylor. It's because Hugh Jackson does not want to play a rookie quarterback. He may have to change his tune on that, but it's not because Baker Mayfield doesn't have the ability to be better than Tyrod Taylor. But I woke up this morning not with that opinion, because let's wait, like, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years before we conclude who's better.
How about a month?
Right. I woke up going, why are people not focusing more on the Giants? Right now, like, Saquon Barkley, mm-hmm. I think is going to be a damn good NFL player. I really do. But it's funny that we're all pointing to Cleveland with the number one pick, because they went quarterback going, oh, look at Cleveland today. Oh, how much regret does Cleveland have? Let me ask you this. How much regret will the Giants have if they fall flat on their face this year because Eli Manning, who, by the way, was awful in week one, can't be a competent quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, you can have a great wide receiver and running back all you want, but if you got nobody that can get him the football, it's still going to be a struggle to win games. And I'm with you. The reaction was hilarious to me, especially considering we haven't even seen Mayfield take a snap. Like, I guess I could understand that narrative if Mayfield had played in week one and really struggled and thrown a couple of picks and he lost him the game or something. And then Darnold, who, by the way, was okay. He wasn't great last night.
He was good enough to win, sure. But he got a complete team effort on defense in the running game.
Yeah, he threw a pick six, but they won that game because Matthew Stafford couldn't stop throwing it to the other team.
Right.
Like Darnold only threw for .198. He didn't even get to 200 yards on the night. So let's pump the brakes on him even having a great night, in my opinion. But we haven't even seen Mayfield play yet. So that's the one that it made me chuckle. But I'm with you on the Giants. You know, I love Saquon Barkley. I think he's going to be the offensive rookie of the year. I think he's going to be a monster. But what you saw again in week one for them was he can have a big game. He went over 100 yards. He had a long touchdown run. Odell Beckham was all over the place against a really tough defense, making some tough catches. you had a weakness, and it was your quarterback. So almost the dream scenario for the Giants is, you know, they suck this year and you got a chance to go get that quarterback, but they're going to be a prime candidate next year to be one of those teams that mortgages the future. Realizing that you have Odell, you have Saquon Barkley, we're going to need to trade a bunch of first-round picks to try and move up into the top five if they're not there already to try and get their quarterback. But it is funny. Nobody points that one out, that they, too, decided to pass on Sam Darnold.
Well, and it's not, yeah, they did decide to pass on Sam Darnold. It's not really just like, okay, they have a quarterback, no big deal, move on. It's not that simple. It really isn't. You can have Saquon Barkley, and as you mentioned, he went for 106. He mm-hmm. almost ran for 6 yards per carry, which is amazing, mm-hmm. especially against that defense. Eli Manning threw it 37 times. He only completed 23 mm-hmm. and went for 224, six-yard average. Like, he is captain checkdown again. He is exactly what he was last year, and he showed us that in week one. He'll have the opportunity in the next 4 or 5 weeks to prove me wrong and make me feel dumb. But I'm going to hold firm on this one. I think if we're going to look back on teams, and again, we are reacting to a one-game sample size from Sam Darnold, who, as you mentioned, he didn't even throw for 200 yards. If we're going to do that, it's not Cleveland. It's the Giants. When we went into the year, we talked about their backup quarterback situation. It was Davis Webb, right? If Eli goes down, who is it? I was like, oh, it's Davis Webb. They cut Davis Webb.
They're not on the team anymore.
They're like, yeah, we don't really want Davis Webb. He actually had a decent little preseason, but they were like, yeah, Davis Webb's not going to be the guy. Okay, great. What if it's not Eli? Then what? Now you are the Jets. And that's what I was thinking about. It wasn't Cleveland. Baker Mayfield could come into this game in 3 or 4 weeks if Cleveland falls flat on their face. And maybe he's up, maybe he's down. I'm going to tell you right now, Sam Darnold's going to have some really ugly games. That's just what a rookie quarterback goes through. I think he's going to be exceptional. I liked him coming out of the draft. I liked Baker. Mm-hmm. It's okay to like multiple guys. You don't have to proclaim after one game in the NFL in which a guy did not even throw for 200 yards that this guy is clearly better than that guy.
Right.
We don't know.
We haven't even seen Rosen play yet. We saw Allen play basically mop-up duty late in that game because they were getting their ass kicked so bad by Baltimore.
I just think the Giants are the bigger one. It's not Cleveland. It's the Giants.
Yeah, well, and to me, honestly, the one game even having the headline of do teams regret on passing on him, it just makes me laugh because we don't know what Darnold's going to turn into. So that was the other part of it. But I think the bigger story out of last night's game is what is Matt Stafford at this point in his career? I mean, some of the numbers behind the struggles that he's had in big moments and on the road, they kind of blow you away when you see him. You realize how little success he's had, and you've always wondered, is it the organization? Is it the head coach? Is it, you know, what's going on around him, and why hasn't he been more successful? Because he seems to have all the talent in the world. And to come out and have a game like that, when you're the veteran quarterback and you get outplayed by a rookie, look, I know he doesn't have a ton to work with in Detroit. I know his head coach is now a defensive-minded guy that wears a pencil in his hat and his hat backwards.
Like, who has the better weapons, though?
Right. I mean, probably him.
Tate and...
you'd probably say him.
Who's the other receiver? I'm blanking. It's Golden Tate and...
Marvin Jones.
Yeah. Those are good weapons.
Picked up Kerryon Johnson.
Right.
Yeah. So, and that just having four picks and seemingly not understanding what the hell's going on around you. I mean, he was awful last night from start to finish. Reminded me a lot of Derek Carr. And we'll get to the late Monday night game in a little bit. But both those guys as veteran quarterbacks coming into your first game, it was a really bad look for both of them.
It was not a good look whatsoever. But Sam Darnold starts his career 1-0, the Jets. And this is kind of what the Jets might be this year. They might be able to sneak one out when people don't expect it, and they might also lay a dud in moments when people expect them to win. I think their defense is pretty okay. Isaiah Crowell, I like their backfield. They got the two running backs there, and you know, you got Robbie Anderson, you've got the tight end. Not bad. Not a bad situation for Sam Darnold. So the Jets start 1-0. All right, we're going to have to audible here, speaking of football, because now
Hot
we're
route.
Joined by
Hot
the the head coach of your Oregon Ducks, Mario Cristobal. He joins us now. How you doing, Coach?
Andy, Brandon, how we doing, man?
We're doing good. We were just talking about people overreacting to the first game because Sam Darnold gets a win, and now everybody's proclaiming that the Cleveland Browns made a mistake not drafting him. I'm assuming you, being in the football business, understand what it's like to watch people overreact to one sample size.
Well, the first thing is I haven't been able to watch any NFL football since 1988 when I started, you know, my career in college, because your Saturdays, Sundays, Mondays are gobbled up. But overreacting. You know, it's football is something that's chapter by chapter in a book that you probably don't want to judge till the end of the season. So, but you know, from what I understand, the guy had a hell of a game, and I'm sure that hey, that's going to draw some type of criticism and reviews and positivity. So, it's all good.
You know, I'm curious to ask you, Coach, after that game on Saturday, just how tough was it to get your team up? I mean, not only are you playing kind of a non-conference game where people aren't giving the other your opponent much of a chance, but then you got an 11 a.m. kick. I mean, just how hard was that getting up that early and getting your group ready to go in such an early kick time?
Well, no, it really wasn't, because we're a morning operation as it is. Like, we actually have breakfast every morning at 6, 6.30. We have our meeting starting between 7.45 and 8 o'clock, and we're practicing every day in the morning. So for us, it was excellent. It was great. It was wake up, hit the ground running, and go right to the stadium. And, you know, for I think the biggest thing that's being emphasized and that we're really starting to see a significant amount of process is that our Tuesday and Wednesday practices are extremely physical and extremely difficult. I mean, it's a true test, and you know, it's helping us in making and establishing the way that we play. Okay, that we're going to play a certain way, and we're going to demand a certain level of execution and excellence. And you know, I think that when you put in that kind of time on Tuesday and Wednesday, that you know, you can't help but have some of those, you know, results. And then more than anything, guys, our senior leadership has been excellent, and they kind of took it over in the locker room and did a heck of a job.
The head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Mario Cristobal, is our guest. He's going to join us every Tuesday around this time here on 1080 The Fan, their game this weekend against San Jose State, and you can catch it here on The Fan. You know, you play opponents, and I know you don't like to hear this. I know a lot of coaches don't like to hear about the level of the opponent that they're going to play, and I understand that part of it, but if you were to look at the schedule, I'm just curious, is there a part of you that kind of craves, or maybe you're circling in 2 weeks, is thinking about a big-time program? I don't mean to diminish San Jose State, and I know you're not going to do that, but looking at these three games, is there any part of you that wishes maybe you'd had a little more challenge the first 2 weeks?
Well, I think you said it perfectly. Anyone that looks at their opponents, regardless who's on the schedule, and doesn't grant them the full respect that they deserve as a football coach and as a player, is making the biggest mistake they could possibly make. And I know it sounds it's far redundant and cliche-ish, but hey, you stick to your guns and you stay the course as it relates to that. I don't think we have been tested yet. I've been very, you know, frank and honest about that. I don't try to, you know, throw any curveballs or head fakes along the way. I do think that, you know, that there's been some really good progress from what we've seen from our players in terms of our execution and the things we're trying to do as a football team of competitors. And I see a team coming in this weekend that has a lot of really good athletes that, you know, spreads you out and puts you in space and makes you, you know, stay true to your rules and makes you stay true to your fundamentals. So, and that's got to be the complete focus. And I said that to our players today. I said that, you know, the monster that comes with this profession is that people are always going to want to skip over and look at other things as opposed to the most important game that you have, which is the one that's coming up. And we respect the heck out of the guys we're about to play, and that's what we're going to be completely focused on.
You know, Coach, a lot of people coming into the year were excited to see and kind of wondering what your skill position groups were going to look like, both the running back position and the wide receiver position. And it felt like kind of a two-parter for you. It felt like you solidified your rotation a little bit in the backfield. So curious what you saw from Verdell and Brooks James and if that's kind of going to be your 1-2 punch moving forward. And then also the receiver position, we saw Schooler break out, make a couple of nice catches. You got Tabari Hines involved in the offense immediately when he hit the field and he got a touchdown. Just wondering what you saw from your skill position groups on Saturday.
Well, we're going to keep turning it up on the running backs. I don't think you could let those guys for a second get comfortable. And those guys are by nature really good competitors. They are. They enjoy it. They understand why we're doing it. They understand how we're doing it. So there is no reason to take our foot off the gas as it relates to up in their competitive, you know, situation. And Tony Brooks-James has really stepped up, done a nice job. But CJ and Travis, and you guys haven't seen Felix yet. Wait till you see Felix touch the ball. You know, he's a different animal as well. So, and then Cyrus, you know, he only touches the ball when it's time to score a touchdown. So he's been fortunate on some of those plays. But the combination of them and the fact that, you know, we spread the ball around pretty good this past week, and I think 11 guys touched it on the receiving side. It gives us an opportunity to evaluate not only who can get the ball, but who can do something with the ball when they get in their hands. And, you know, who's lining up correctly, who's running the right routes, who's finishing plays with or without the ball in their hands. So I think we can benefit only from continuing to push this competitive situation that we have. And, you know, at some point in time, it'll streamline a little bit, but we don't want to do that yet.
This is Ducks head coach Mario Cristobal joining us every Tuesday now here around the 12:30 segment on the show. Their game against San Jose State this weekend. You're going to have to take us into the film room a little bit in this sense, coach. I can watch some games and I can notice some things, but ultimately you're the coach. You guys understand really what's going on the field. I walk away from a Portland State game, 62 points scored, 14 allowed, 500 yards of offense. And I just think, what do you yell at your players for? Like, what did you notice on tape that you're telling your kids about that so far you don't like?
Well, the part that you don't like is the quarterback was sacked once, which can never happen. You know, we have a no sack policy around here, and anything less than that is just unacceptable. There were a couple things in protection you got to shore up. There was a late corner fire, a late what we call the rover, which is a glorified safety. You know, that they green dog, which means they kind of check the run. They see the running back's protecting him and then goes out for a pass. And then he hits the gas and goes and tries to hit the quarterback. And you've got to have eye discipline to make that happen. So I think those things stood out. I think getting caught, you know, by a trick play is another one. Or losing our eyes, or like you would say when we're playing man coverage, not keeping your eyes on your luggage. On the one deep pass they hit for a touchdown, it was kind of a little bit of a busted play. And the thing kind of coming out the backside when the tight end pivoted and stretched the secondary a little bit. I mean, those things really stand out. As things you don't like, but there's plenty of stuff that you do like, and you know, we tell our guys, and you know, I think we need to always go by this. If it's not good enough when you lose, it shouldn't be good enough when you win. So the same things that we point out on unsuccessful, you know, plays and days, we point them out even when a play is successful and you have a really good day. So I think if you stick to your guns when you're teaching like that, you're going to have a lot of progress.
You know, I'm curious to ask you, Coach, this obviously isn't your first go-around as a head coach now in college football, but it's been a couple of years since you've been in charge of a program. I'm just wondering how much different you're doing things now than when you did things at FIU. How much have you changed since your last run as a head coach?
Well, you could imagine that. In that place, you had to do everything. You had to be the academic representative. You had to be the dorm manager. You had to be the travel coordinator. The tutor, you had to do it all because of the lack of resources. And mind you, that was a program that we inherited a five-year probation, the hit of like 25, 30 scholarships. There's a lot of things that went on with that. That also let you cut your teeth and overcome, you know, some really significant, you know, circumstances. And I think when you go to a place like the last stop I was at Alabama, and you get to see a Power 5 program run in, with a regiment, as it relates to the offseason, the fourth quarter program, sports psychology, the attack on mentality, the practice regimen, the rep count, the rotation, everything that goes with all that, the way that you game plan, the way that you structure your game day I plan, meaning what coaches are responsible for what two to three guys on each and every play as it relates to what phases on the field. You know, I think when you go to a place like that, you kind of walk away with your PhD on several things, and we've applied the blueprint. And I feel extremely comfortable and confident, and more than anything, just eager and hungry on a daily basis to get after it because the plan really is it's rolling.
So when can we expect to see The Rock on the sidelines this year? What game?
You know, you've been waiting for that the whole time. This was all just a setup.
It was.
I do it. You know what? I think hopefully it will be a surprise in the near future. I know he's... He's pretty busy, but one heck of a teammate and a stand-up guy, so we're certainly looking forward to hosting him one day in the near future here in Eugene.
I do feel like I need to ask you this real quick, and we get you out of here on this one, not to be too somber or anything, but I'm just kind of curious because I've never been able to ask you this. Where were you on 9/11 when that happened?
I was at Rutgers University. It was my first job, and I'll never forget. We were preparing for practice, and you know, that's, you're looking at being about 50 minutes from the actual, you know, from the World Trade Center, and it affected obviously the whole world, our country, like nothing else has, right, in recent history. But being up there in the Northeast and the fact that, you know, the tunnels and the bridges and everything were shut down, and families on our team and the community were involved, and they were literally on that side of the bridge. They were on that side, you know, on the other side on the island. Gosh, I, it's you know, it's hard to put in words how what an impact, what a tremendous just emotional blow that was to to our team and, you know, to the people right there in New Jersey and New Brunswick. And, you know, we found a way to stick together,
Yeah, that's a challenge that most coaches don't want to have to go through in their lives, but I'm sure you guys were able to get through it as a staff. Mario Cristobal is going to join us every Tuesday at 12:30 here on The Fan. You catch their game against San Jose State on Saturday here on The Fan. Coach, good luck this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, brother. Have a good one, man.
All right, there we go. Mario Cristobal, the head coach for the Oregon Ducks, on his thoughts on the season thus far.
You can, I think you can tell in his voice he's ready for a good test. He's ready. And he's said it a couple of times now. They have not been challenged yet. He's not lying. He's not fluffing anybody up about that. They haven't been challenged. He knows it. They're not going to get challenged this week. Everybody's got Stanford circled on their calendars.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, man. I know coaches don't like to do that, but a lot of people are already jumping ahead from this game to the next one. All right, let's do the other Monday Night Football game and talk about the Raiders and the John Gruden debut that did not go particularly well, especially in the second half. We'll do that next. Is this a Sports Center? Okay. A sports update with Swag. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here on The Fan. I didn't know he was at Rutgers.
I didn't either.
But generally, was just curious where he was at in his career.
Mm-hmm. I think he touched a...
You could kind of, yeah.
He touched nerve a little bit there. Not in a bad way.
Yeah, I think he just started rethinking about the day and the moment. And
it's that kind of day for everybody. I think everybody that's old enough. That's
because you know, he was at 15 minutes from there. You know, he saw.
Yeah, Rutgers is, yeah, I mean, that's in New York.
Smoke. And yeah.
That's wild. I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, I did. I kind of ended that on a little bit of a, I felt a little bad because you could tell that was obviously a really emotional time for him. But
we built it up too. And we joked about The Rock and things were going good.
Yeah. It was almost like somebody was listening and then told them, hey, they're going to ask you a Rock question.
You know it's going to come.
It's like, you guys just been waiting the whole time.
And there was your breaking news. If you want to focus on the positive of that interview, that is The Rock is coming at some point.
You can tell, right?
It's got to be Stanford or Washington, in my opinion. It's got to be one of those two games.
This is why I don't think it's Stanford, and I feel really bad admitting this. I follow him on Instagram.
The Rock?
I think he's pretty amazing. He's currently shooting a movie for Disney right now.
Okay.
Like some Jungle Cruise movie.
Do we know when it wraps? When does shooting wrap?
These movies usually take, 6 to 8 weeks to shoot, and then they're done?
No clue.
So I would more so circle a different game than I would Stanford.
Okay.
But The Rock is going to be there.
One listener did point out, apparently I don't follow it as closely as some, but apparently the number one recruit in the country is coming to visit Oregon the weekend of the Washington game.
So that might be a week and the number one's there. You bring some of your committed kids, they talk them into it a little more.
Right, right.
You have your hosts help them out and you invite a handful of others and then boom, here's Dwayne Johnson. Nice to meet you, kid.
It's The Rock walking around the sidelines. That's always a big deal when somebody famous is on the sidelines. I'll never forget being down there walking around at the game during the NBA lockout when it was LeBron, Chris Paul, Carmelo,
D-Wade,
Dwayne Wade.
Yep.
And they were playing catch on the sideline and running around. And it was like, this is kind of weird because you're supposed to be playing in the NBA. But it was also crazy just the fact that they were there. And then Oregon went on to lose that game.
Right.
They lost that game to Lane Kiffin in
USC.
That's
right. I remember that night.
They missed a kick. I can't remember if it was a kick to send it to overtime or if they lost in overtime, but it was old Maldonado missed a kick and they lost to USC.
I think that's a moment that admittedly I will be very jealous about if you get The Rock to go on your sideline. That's pretty badass. But
what's the protocol for me? Because I will be there.
I would ask for a picture. I would say, hey, I work for the station that has the Ducks. This would be great for our social media.
He doesn't care about any of that.
Right, but it's a way to get in real quick.
Okay.
Don't just be the guy with a media pass that goes, can I get a pic?
Hey, can I get a picture of you?
Hey, would you call him Rock or do you call him Dwayne? That's another question. Call him Mr. Johnson's kind of weird. Because you're Johnson.
Can I just yell at him, I smell what you're cooking as he walks by?
No, but it'd be funny if you took a picture, and then as he was walking, we go, hey, Dwayne. And he looks back, and you take your finger right in your nose and go, I smell what you're cooking. And then you just creepily walk away.
He tells that story for another 5 years.
You'd leave an impression on him for sure. But you remember that creepy white kid?
Crystal Ball's going to cancel his interview. Dude, I met this radio guy on the sideline. He's a really weird guy.
He wouldn't be able to accept anything either. He's an Under Armour guy.
He is. Yeah, that's true.
And his brand is like the most successful brand that Under Armour has.
Yeah, how is that going to work for him walking around the sidelines? He can't wear Oregon stuff then, right?
They'd have to give him a non-Nike logoed hat of some sort. You know they have something around.
It's got to be some sort of a green and yellow gear that he can wear.
Right, right.
Because you can't, I mean, Under Armour is a big no-no. That's a competitor.
It is a big no-no. They're here in Portland now.
Yeah.
All right, we didn't get to it there. Let's get to the Monday Night Football game. What did you make of John Gruden's debut? The Better You Today text line is 55305, and boy, the Rams look good. That's next on The Fan. Now because you wear. Pretty good opportunity for a That's What She Said joke. Trump was asked about Hurricane Florence. He said, quote, it's tremendously big and tremendously wet, end quote. Phil Steele will join us at 1 o'clock. Don't shake your head. I didn't say the quote. The president did. Phil Steele will join us at 1 o'clock. We'll talk some college football with him. We did not discuss John Gruden. What do you feel about old Johnny Boy's debut last night as the Rams? They ended up blowing him out with a pick six there.
Yeah.
But what did we think of what we made of John Gruden?
I thought Derek Carr sucks. That was my takeaway from that game last night. John Gruden is getting he's getting a pretty rough treatment today because
he's getting destroyed. Yeah,
his team lost by 20 points in his opener, and he did not have a great quote after the game, basically saying we could use a pass rusher. Oh, you don't say, John. You don't say. You just traded one away last week. So that was what I was thinking watching that game. I mean, they got outscored 23-0, I believe, in the second half. So it was a bad second half, and they had no pass rush. They had nobody that could set the edge against Todd Gurley in the running game. And the Rams basically did whatever they wanted to do offensively against them. So, look, it's not a great way to start. Shouldn't we point the finger first at Derek Carr? He was awful last night.
Yeah, awful. I mean, first pick was, I still don't understand what he was doing because he tried to seem like Jordy Nelson screwed it up, but that was clearly just a terrible decision. And then the picks, they weren't going to win, but the pick six was just,
the pick six was the icing on the cake. Yeah, the one pick that he threw, I think it was the one that was supposed to be to Jordy Nelson that you're talking about. That's one of the worst throws I've ever seen.
That was pretty bad, yeah.
It looked like when he released it, it looked like he was trying to throw the ball away. That was my thought. It was the second he released it, oh, he's just throwing it away. But then you're wondering why he's throwing it away, because the pass rush wasn't on him. It wasn't like he was about to go down. He just straight lobbed it. It wasn't out of bounds. There was no receiver within. It looked like 5 to 10 yards of that thing, and it fell right into the hands of a Rams defensive back.
He looked like Nathan Peterman.
He did.
And I think this is the concerning part. Like, I know the Khalil Mack, like, no doubt there was an obvious need for Khalil Mack. But Derek Carr, there's really something to be said about him because I like Derek Carr. I don't know what's happened to Derek Carr. And I might have been Booger. It might have been Tessitore. Somebody on Monday Night Football had suggested or thrown out something about post that leg injury.
Mm-hmm.
He isn't the same.
Yeah, last year and then obviously this opener this year.
He's a little jittery. He doesn't want to hang around in that pocket. He doesn't want to obviously take a big hit. And you saw that his reaction to Aaron Donald when Aaron Donald got that BS roughing the passer penalty because he grabbed his legs. Because, by the way, what else is he supposed to do in that situation? You could kind of see the anger there of like, don't touch my legs. I'm starting to wonder if he's like mentally cooked right now. If he's allowing too many things to consume his thoughts, whether that's being timid, being gun shy, I don't know what it is, but there is something off about Derek Carr.
Yeah, and that was the main takeaway from last night. I don't know. I don't think the Raiders are going to be a great team this year. On the opposite side, I do think the Rams are the real deal. They have weapons all over the field.
I don't know how they don't look like the favorite to everybody after week one.
It's tough. It's tough to think of a team that looked better than them in the opener. Just the way they can beat you in the running game, the targets that they have on the outside.
Their weakness? Jared Goff, for all the jokes we make, yeah. I thought he looked like he took a big step in that offense. He looked like he was confident. He's in command of it. McVay trusts him. He is not Jared Goff of 2 years ago that we made fun of for knowing or not knowing where the sun rises and sets.
Well, and he had one of the worst rookie years we've seen in a long time from a quarterback. He was terrible. And again, Jeff Fisher being your head coach, it's not a great place to start. I would still say he's their weakness, but I don't even know if you can call it a weakness. I think if you're trying to find one point of their team that could hold them back from winning a championship, I still don't think he's on the same level as some of the upper echelon quarterbacks in the NFL. I wouldn't put him in that top five conversation.
Oh, no doubt.
So I think if you're going to try and find one, it would be that. But he has the benefit of one of, if not the best offensive mind and a head coach in McVay. He has the benefit of a solid offensive line. He has a benefit of a dominant defense. He's got Todd Gurley to hand the ball off to. And he can pick between, you know, Cooper Kupp and Brandon Cooks and Robert Wood. Who do you want to throw the ball to? Pick your poison. They got weapons all over the place. And they just leaned on him in the second half with the help of some Derek Carr interceptions.
Would you bet on them right now if you had to bet on a team to win?
No.
Who would you bet? You stick with Minnesota?
I stick with Minnesota.
Yeah, because what I did was, and I'm not changing my pick here because I went Packers, Chargers. Mm-hmm. I did walk away just from 1 week saying, damn, if we're going off 1 week feel,
yeah.
Again, where's the weakness? Because with Goff, they have McVay.
The interesting part about that game last night, too, is it was close. I mean, that game was, I mean, the Raiders had the lead at the half. They're up 13-10. I want to say it was still like 13-13 or 16-13, somewhere in that range, like late in the third quarter. I mean, they were hanging around in that ball game. And then it was a couple of picks, and Oakland couldn't move the ball, and a couple of... They just couldn't get anything going in the running game late in the second half, and things overwhelmed on them, and the Rams eventually ran away with it. I think the overriding story, though, from week one of the college football season, or excuse me, from the NFL season, is just terrible quarterback play from guys that you would even think are established starters, too. Garoppolo threw a bunch of picks. Derek Carr threw a bunch of picks. Mariota didn't look good. I know he was banged up, but it was a terrible debut for him. Ben Roethlisberger threw three interceptions. Case Keenum threw three interceptions. You just keep going. Tannehill threw a couple of picks. You go up and down. There are a lot of guys that you're kind of looking at as either established starters or guys going into really big years of here's your chance. Let's see what you got. And a lot of guys fell flat in week one.
Yeah, I almost feel like there's like three or four different things we could touch on here, but we got Phil Steele is going to join us here in like 4 minutes. This is a quick question, and this is an easy answer for me. Who had the worst weekend, Carr or Mariota?
Carr for me.
It's easy. Mariota, he got hurt. I think anytime you escape without injury, as bad as Carr was, I think you just don't want to get injured.
Yeah, in that regard, Mariota did because we don't know how healthy he's going to be. But
that's the unfortunate part. Yeah. All right, we might dive back into that because I still think there's a couple avenues we could take that with John Gruden, how we really felt about him, and then just the Rams in general and how amazing Sean McVay and that team really are. But coming up next to start hour two, Phil Steele, the college football guru, he will join us now every Tuesday at 1 o'clock, and that starts next. Dirt and Sprague back with more on Portland Sports Leader.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.